Salutations and shit, folks. Welcome, welcome, welcome back to another episode of your favorite travel podcast, Travel and Shit, where I, your host, D. Carrie, have an experiential conversation about the nuanced ways that travel intersects with regular life. So, I randomly came across a tweet during the week, and it was one of those random things. Mind you, I personally prefer the, I think it's the For You tab on Twitter as opposed to the people that I follow, oddly enough. But I came across one of those random accounts, Best Clips or whatever is their name. It's, the ad is Best Fight Clip. Anyway, it's not a fight. Turns out it's a fucking sport. So it was from February 29th, and it's whatever the fuck going on, red and black shorts, the Michael Jordan of it. It looks like a slapping match or some kind of organized fight with it, not gymnastics, but shorty's flipping over people and it's very, I don't want to say it's entertaining, yes, but that's not what I want to elicit here. It's more a feeling of, oh, there's skill here. Like it just, it's, I'm not doing it service. So that sent me on a little rabbit hole, right? Well, not even a rabbit hole, because thankfully somebody in the thread was like, oh no, like that's actually a real sport. It's called kabaddi. And seeing that sent me into the rabbit hole. And here we have today's episode, Weird Sports Around the Fucking World. Took me a while to get to that point. That's what we're talking about this week. Weird sports around the world. Now, I say weird hesitantly because weird is subjective. Just because it is new to me does not preclude it from being normal for other people. It is one of those things that I personally am uncomfortable saying when it comes to things that are done by consenting adults, and that for the most part, everybody is safe. And you're absolutely not. I would never be safe doing this, but it is an obscure or very new to me. And I would assume that, I'm not even gonna assume, looking at the data, the most of us are from the United States. And then from after the United States, North America, Canada. So the majority of my listenership, shout out to those of y'all from countries abroad, or for those of you that are in these countries but hail from other regions of the world, some of these may not be very strange to you. So to keep it concise, I tried to find the shortest explanation of what these sports were. A lot of it is just the Wikipedia page, and I don't want to go down too far into details of any particular sport, but I just wanted to open your eyes to more than just the soccers and the footballs and the basketballs of the world. There are long-standing cultural traditions that are staples in these cultures that we visit, in these communities that we are, you know, borrowing time and space of. And I thought that as someone who isn't a sports person in general, what would I actually want to sit through? What would I be interested in seeing? And I think it had me thinking, like, so one of them is Lucha Libre. I don't think that's weird at all. It's just like theatrical wrestling, right? But that I would absolutely want to go see. And I think it's because it has been something that has been colored in for me already, right? I've heard and seen so many colorful examples of what a spectacle it is and how exciting and entertaining that is. And I personally have loved both of my trips to Mexico. And so I would absolutely go back. And this is something that I would sit through. So that's on the list. But also, there are a bunch of little sub lists. So if you just Google, weird sports from around the world, there's a really decent drop down that's got, 15, 24. It's got about 24 listed, but then there are a few websites that 30 and 25 and 15 and 27. So there's a ton, there's a dozens of them out there, right? But I chose a few that stood out to me. And the first one that I mentioned to you guys was Kabaddi. And, was that what I wanted? Nope. Here we go. Wikipedia. So Kabaddi is a contact team sport played between two teams of seven players originating in ancient India. So the objective of the game is for a single player on offense, referred to as a raider, to run into the opposing team's half of the court, and you have to touch out as many of their players as possible and return to your half of the court all without being tackled by the defenders in 30 seconds. Skipping over the points, little dialogue, but it is popular in the Indian subcontinent and other surrounding Asian countries. Although accounts of Kabaddi appear in the histories of ancient India, the game was popularized as a competitive sport in the 20th century. It is the national sport of Bangladesh. It is the second most popular and viewed sport in India after cricket. One more time. It is the second most popular and viewed sport in India after cricket. India has a shit ton of people. For something to be a second most viewed something there, big fucking deal. India is huge. It is the state game of the Indian states, a couple of different India. Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's not just a national sport of Bangladesh, but of other Indian states. It is enthralling to look at. It's a bunch of guys. Now, one of the videos was dudes in just like, what do you call them? I guess shorts. And I'm looking at another photo. It's like they actually have more of a more uniform look where they have tops and bottoms. But it is actually, let me see if I still have that link open. I don't think I do. But it was on like a substage of the Olympics. It's been, like, do I still have that shit open? No, I think I saved it though. So I'll add that link to, there'll be a bunch of links in the description box. But Kabaddi looks fucking nuts. It looks like some it gives more of like, from the video that I saw, it gives more of like a choreographed fight, but like a mix of tag and like slap boxing. So that's what it was giving. All right. So what else did I have on the list? Oh, another dumb one. Cheese rolling. So cheese rolling involves racing down a hill. The people race behind a wheel of Gloucester cheese. The cheese gets a 1 second head start and can reach speeds of 112 kilometers an hour. In 97, the cheers veered off course and injured a spectator. Now, of course, some of these sites have like more information, but we actually watched a YouTube video on the shit, I think last night, a little clip. You are literally throwing yourself down a hill. The hill is so steep, you can't see the bottom. Like, it's like one of those optical illusion hills. If a roll of cheese ends up going 112 kilometers, let's do that in miles. 112 kilometers to miles. That is what, 70 miles? Yes, 69.59 miles. It's fucking 70 miles an hour. 70 miles an hour. There's a roll of cheese. You are throwing yourself down a hill that is steep enough for a roll of cheese to achieve a speed of 70 miles an hour, 112 kilometers. And you are throwing yourself down that hill, that little hill. It is wild steep. People were flying, bouncing. There are so many injuries. It looks wildly uncomfortable. There are men, there are women, there look to be young-ish folks, look to be old-ish folks. This is something that I don't think that I personally would want to be a spectator of. I have noticed that as I have gotten older, I don't even really like watching fights. Yes, a pause there. A good fight video, I could probably sit through. I used to really love watching boxing, But after a while, especially even like MMA fighting, I can't watch anymore. It's too much for me. I don't want to see people bleeding. I don't want to see, in my head, somebody's going to get their fucking the neck snapped. And I don't want to see that. And that's what Cheese Rolling was giving. People are bouncing and it's like, I'm watching people fall on their necks. I'm watching people's arms twist in wild positions. It was a difficult little clip to watch. And it's for people to, I don't understand why you would put yourself at such risk. Like the winner keeps the cheese. So you are risking life and limb to keep cheese. Now, I get that some things may have cultural significance. And so I'm trying to leave space for that to possibly be why people are so willing to risk it. I mean, people think possibly living in a large city is, you know, as risky to life and limb as throwing yourself down a wildly steep hill. The one that they showed, because I believe this happens in the UK. It doesn't say it in this website that on this, what is this? This one is businessinsider.com. It doesn't say where it originated here. I might have that link saved someplace else, but I'm not going to trouble you with me digging that out right now. But why would I want to throw myself down a hill? And it's not even like a fun hill where there are no like tools. You're not sledding down, or you're literally just throwing yourself down a hill or sliding down a hill. I saw one person attempt to just like slide all the way down. That didn't work. Gravity. Like the science of it all. But yeah, Cheese Rolling? Absolutely the fuck not. I don't even need to watch that. What was the next one? Okay, Extreme Ironing. This one was so fucking stupid. So initially when I saw it, I was just like, well, how can you make ironing a sport? Is it how fast you can iron? Is it like the number of pleats in a thing that you're ironing? Is it like the skill with which you iron? It is just regular ironing in wildly extreme and dangerous situations. You have someone that will climb up a mountain and iron on the side of a mountain. Someone will get to a very precarious perch. Imagine ironing on the top of the Empire State Building, but like not strapped in something, like not behind a gate or a barrier of any sort. You're just wild high thing. The photo in this description here is three folks skydiving and ironing. So there's two people holding the ironing board and one person actually ironing. So they are ironing while skydiving. That's extreme ironing. It is touted as the least danger sport that combines the thrills of an extreme outdoor activity with the satisfaction of a well-pressed shirt. That whatever. Because I don't even assume that these folks are well-pressing anything. Unless you are doing it stationary. Like if you climb something and you're like engaging your core to not fall off the side of a wall somehow. Cool. But apparently it's all about pushing the envelope and having a well-ironed shirt. One thing that sometimes annoys me with some of these websites that are doing like 12 this, 9 these or whatever. It's just like you give so much snark and like witty banter. It's just like, okay, no, tell me more. We're here for a reason. I'm a little intrigued, right? I don't need it all to be gaffes and jokes and shit, but yeah, extreme ironing, I was not impressed. It just seemed very strange to me. What was the other one? There's another. Yeah, this is the picture of the guy that is on top of the, it's like a, I don't want to say like a rock, but it's, he's in a, oh, yep. This guy is water skiing. Let's just open up more images. We've got one person. Okay, someone's underwater ironing. Don't know how they did that. There's another underwater. Lots of people on mountains. There is someone, looks like base jumping. while ironing. They literally appear to have jumped off of a cliff. I guess they're going to parachute at some. I hope they collected all their shit afterwards and they're not like also, what do you call littering. You've got water skiers, someone, okay. Oh, are they flying? It looks like someone is ironing on the back of someone while hanging off of plane wings, paragliding and ironing. Yeah. And they're all that I have not seen one cordless iron, by the way, with all these water sports. I don't know what they're who they're fooling. Like, are you, so you've got like a plugged in iron at the beach, bro? What is it plugged into? A generator? Why are you bringing a generator by the water? You know what I mean? It's just I personally can't get behind it, but not everything's for me. Not everything is for me. This is another thing that I don't need to see. I don't even think this is something that, you know, most people per se perform with an audience. I think it's more about being able to have the photos or the video that it happened and that was you. Whatever your yums are. Not for me. Cheese rolling, extreme ironing. What did we have next? Oh, this shit was impressive, though. Okay, this I would watch. Fucking unicycle polo. They're playing polo on a unicycle. It's basically like hockey, right? So unicycle polo is the... no, skip that. Also, unicycle, also known as unicycle hockey, it is a game that sees two teams of five play hockey while riding unicycles. The game is similar to ice hockey. The goals are set proud from either end. Oh, as in like the goal, like not the goal, the objective, but like the actual goal. Like we got a point. The goals are set proud from either end, allowing players to move behind the net. Oh, that was cool. Skating position, ice hockey sticks are used to hit a tennis ball. Skating position, ice hockey sticks. That's why it didn't make sense because I'm not familiar with hockey sticks. Whatever a skating position ice hockey stick is, that. Oh, I guess they just mean that it's a hockey stick that is the same as what they would use in regular hockey. I'm assuming that there are different types of sticks. Unicycler hockey is a no contact sport often played by mixed gender teams. The decision to create a fast paced sport on unicycles is commendable, but certainly makes the game one of the most random sports around. I've seen worse. That shit actually just looks like it takes skill. It's a unicycle to begin with. I am not seeing where this originated or where it began here, but this shit I would sit through because I can objectively say that there is skill required to compete in this. I can't see myself on a unicycle. I mean, I think I'd have to get like, I don't want to say a running head start, but I'd have to like have somebody start rolling with me, I think would be my most successful attempt. Like if I started just like riding with someone walking alongside so that I wasn't falling. And once I was so, I think I could get like maybe two rotations. Am I playing myself? I might be. But, and then hockey. I've got no point of reference for hockey except for that coworker that eats, breathes, and sleeps the shit. So whenever I end up working with him, he goes on and on about it. But other than that, that shit looks interesting. Similar to unicycle hockey is cycle ball. Now, cycle ball, also known as radball, this, well, that's from German. I don't know. Oh, here we go. Yeah, also a German sport. So shout out to, yeah, I got some more Wikipedia pages for this one. This the Wikipedia gives a little better description of where. So cycle ball, radball is a sport similar to association football played on bicycles. So this is an actual two-wheel bike. However, there is more to know about the bike. Oh, it's only two people. Okay, the two people on each team ride a fixed gear bicycle with no brakes or freewheel. I don't know what freewheel is, but there are no fucking brakes. Let me see if it just gives a quick. Oh, freewheel. On a bicycle, the cassette or cluster is a set of multiple sprockets that attaches to. Okay, so for those of y'all that know about bikes, you know what a a free wheel is, but it looks like it's the gears on the bike. Yeah, okay. It's a cog that works with a reel. Yeah, I don't. This means nothing to me. But it looks like a gear, but they're like stacked on top of each other. I don't fucking know, y'all. But the ball is controlled by the bike and the head, except when defending the goal. That's the only time you can use your hands, apparently. A bike with no brakes. Thankfully, there's only four of y'all on the court, and I'm making the assumption that that is inclusive of your goalie also. But it was introduced in 1893 by a German American, Nicholas Edward Kaufman. Its first world championships, go figure, were in 1929. Cycleball is popular in Austria, Belgium, the Czech Republic, France, Germany, Japan, the Netherlands, Russia, and Switzerland. The most successful players were from Czechoslovakia, world champions 20 times between 65 and 1988. It is closely related, well, closely related is artistic cycling, in which the athletes perform a kind of gymnastics on cycles. That's impressive also. Ooh. One thing I gotta say about Wikipedia that I do quite enjoy is that their hyperlinks, they soft open like a pop-up screen in the window that you're in. So without having to click either into a new tab or just click it where it is, you can pop, it'll pop up and explain what it is. So artistic cycling is a form of competitive indoor cycling, which athletes perform tricks for points on specialized fixed gear bikes in a format similar to ballet or gymnastics. The exercises are performed in front of judges in 5-minute rounds by singles, pairs, 4 or 6 person teams. And this is giving, and in the photo accompanied here is a gentleman that is balancing his bike on the rear wheel. The front wheel is almost at a 90 degree angle, and he is standing on the pedals, not sitting. So he is standing on the pedals with the bike almost very much so perpendicular to the ground. That is the best that I can describe it. I did my best there, but that is impressive. I could see sitting through maybe not cycle ball, but artistic cycling? Fuck yes. I could see watching that. It's kind of like, dare I even say it? Because I hate it. But I res So if you're from New York, right? Specifically someone who has to drive through Brooklyn. I'm all for gang gang and having camaraderie. But when the weather breaks and them niggas be out on them bikes and them four-wheelers, I'm telling you, it's dozens of them. And they're just like on Atlantic. And if you're not familiar, Atlantic is three, it's 3 lanes. So it's like a thoroughfare, if you will. 3 lanes going each way. Residential and commercial. It's like a main vein going through. Think of a main vein in your town, and it's basically that. Very heavily trafficked in during rush hour specifically. Schools along the route, so you've got school buses in the way, you got doctor's offices and everything is my point here, right? And you can have dozens of seemingly grown men completely fucking up traffic, not just going like in and out of cars, but like it's dozens of bikes just driving on the streets, right? Which is fine. But it's the ones that have to slow everything up by doing the tricks and doing the wheelies and spinning the round and rushing up behind somebody's car, braking quickly. It's fucking annoying, and I hate it. I do. But if there were more space, the spectacle of it all, I love seeing it. Not while I'm trying to beat some planes. You feel me? Feel me? Otherwise, fucking big hate it. Big hate it. So it's like watching the bike boys do the wheelies, but like with a little more oomph, if you will. So that I would want to see. Artistic cycling. What else did we have on my little list here? I mentioned Lucha Libre, which I don't think is weird or strange. Different. This was a cool one. Okay, CPAC Tac Raw. Let me see if I'm pronouncing that right. Where's the little speaker thing? Well, they don't have one here. Poo-poo on you, Wikipedia. But this one is basically, to me, it looked like kind of like a hacky sack kind of sport, right? So this CPAC, let me make this larger. Acting like I can fucking see. Yes, here we go. CPAC Tacra or Sepactacra. Yeah. Also called buckleball, kick volleyball for Americans here. That makes a little sense to us, yeah? Or foot volleyball is a team sport played with a ball made of rattan. I think it's called rattan. Or synthetic plastic between two teams of 2 to 4 players on a court resembling a badminton court. It is similar to volleyball and foot volley in its use of a rattan ball and players using only their feet, knees, shoulders, chest, and head to touch the ball. CPAC Tacra is often referred to as a mixture of volleyball due to its use of a net and association football as players use their feet. And I want to say that association football is basically, it is soccer. So association football, more commonly known as football or soccer. So that is essentially what it is. The sport's modern version was introduced, developed, and standardized in 1960 when officials from Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand, and Myanmar met in Kuala Lumpur to agree on a name and standard rules for it. It was previously known as CPAC Raga Jaring and was first exhibited in Penang in 1945. It was introduced in the 1965 Southeast Asian Games in Kuala Lumpur as a medal event, and it is considered Malaysia's national sport. There is an international governing body, which was formed in 1988, and there are actually major international tournaments, and they list about 3 or 4 of them. Which is cool to know also is that it resembles native sports known as CPAC Raga in Brunei, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore. Takraw and Raga in Indonesia, a game in the Philippines, something else in Myanmar. So it's basically, it seems as if all of those countries that I mentioned before are part of like just an amalgamation of different pieces of it, or it resembled what has been played in a bunch of different places. Laos, Cambodia, and it's also claimed to be related to Kuju in China, Khao Mai in Vietnam, Korean game, a Japanese game. That's pretty fucking cool. We ended up seeing, we caught a clip of it on, again, something I think we found on YouTube. And it looks like, you know, how somebody just plays with the hacky sack or just like when they bounce like the foot, like a soccer ball on their foot kind of thing. You're playing volleyball with your feet. You can't use your hands. It's like the agility, like somebody doing like, not even like a Chuck Norris roundhouse, but like that kick where both of your feet are off the air, like off the ground, and you're like, it's wild. Like it's like the soccer kick, like that big soccer kick when like both of their feet come up and they kick one, but now it's going over a net. Super cool. That shit I would watch just because, again, objective skill is necessary. It's, to me, very cool. What did I have next? Oh, this shit I would also not sit through. I was repulsed. Bog snorkeling. This is some shit. So, again, let's make this page larger. Thank you. Bog snorkeling is a sporting event. Really? But this is from Wikipedia. they're saying it's a sporting event, where competitors aim to complete two consecutive lengths of 60 yards, 55 meters, of a 60-yard, 55-meter water-filled trench cut through a peat bog in the shortest time possible, wearing traditional snorkel, diving mask, and flippers. They compete the course without swimming, relying on flipper power alone. I don't know how you're not swimming if you're relying on flipper powers. Like, how are you not swimming if you're relying on the flippers? That's where they lost me. Excuse me. Let's go back. They lost me at being in a bog. That's where you lost me. But then trying to tell me that you're not swimming while relying on flipper power. How are we not slipping? You see where I'm at? I can't see how that is how those two things are different. Again, I don't want to watch, nor do I want to participate. Interestingly enough, the women's world record stands at 1 minute, 22.56 seconds by Christy Johnson in 2014. The men's world record was set by Neil Rudder in 2018 with a time of 1 minute, 18.81 seconds. Both were set at the Weyhen Rhydenbog. It's in Wales. This shit is done in Wales. There are fucking rules. People wear wetsuits. They must wear snorkels, masks, and flippers. They must traverse two consecutive lengths, totaling 120 yards in the shortest time possible. Okay. The course must be completed without using conventional swimming strokes, relying on flipper power alone. So I'm assuming it just means that you can only use your legs. Oh, so gross to me. There are world record holders. I don't know why. But this. Okay, no, this one wasn't in Wales. So it's mostly done in Wales. I'm seeing. Yep, lots of Wales, lots of Wales. I don't know where that is. There was a championship. Y'all, no interest. Okay, yeah, there it is. It is, I want to say this is a UK thing. Competitors travel from as far as Australia, Belgium, Canada, China, England, Finland, Germany, Ireland, New Zealand, Poland, Russia, South Africa, South Korea, Wales, and the US. Okay, here we go. Other bog snorkeling events take place, particularly in Wales, but also in Australia, Ireland, and Sweden. These include the bog snorkeling triathlon, which consists of a 120-yard snorkel, a 19-mile bike ride, and a 7.5-mile run. Okay, proceeds from the World Championship go to a local charity. Past recipients include cystic fibrosis trust, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. No. Not the bog. I am thinking of all of the really super just gross shit. It's a bog. Snakes and spiders. Why? Why, people? Mm-mm. Never know, not me. That's an absolute hell no. What did I have here? Oh, this one I'd heard of before. A caber toss. It is a traditional. I love being able to make the text so much bigger. Traditional Scottish athletic event in which competitors toss a large tapered pole called a caber. It is normally practiced at the Scottish Highland Games. In Scotland, the caber is usually made from a larch tree, and it can be between 16 to 20 feet, which is 5 to 6 meters tall, and weigh 90 to 150 pounds. I weigh about 150 pounds. I'm like 145. But I'm also only 5'5". These are 16 to 20 feet. This is, you're throwing a telephone pole. The term caber derives from the Gaelic word Kabar, which refers to a wooden beam. The person tossing the caber is called a tosser or a thrower. Although the sport is primarily associated with Scotland, a similar exercise, casting the bar, was popular in England in the 16th century, and similar sports exist around the world, such as a place in Sweden. Oh, the record for the most caber tosses in 3 minutes is currently held by the Canadian Danny Frame. He managed to perform 16 successful caber tosses on July 20th of 2018 in the Heart of the Valley Festival in Middleton, Nova Scotia, Canada. It is... Now, if there were, like, free admission or something maybe less than, like, $10, I could say... Shits and gigs. Let's watch really strong guys throw a stick. And what's cool is that it looks as if there are, like, there's an actual technique to throwing it. It's, you're not long faulting it or anything like that. And it's like, oh, we did watch a video of this also. It's like, first of all, you are just picking up a tree with your hands and from straight from the ground. So just the sheer strength of being able to put your hands around something and lifting it straight off the ground. Give me handles and I can still struggle trying to lift something up. I can't imagine the center of gravity being so far away from, yeah, it, again, objective skill. This isn't something that the average person can just up and do. So this is some shit that I actually, yeah, I'd pay a couple dollars to get in to see this. I prefer not to. But this is something that I would be interested in seeing. Another one that I would not. Gurning. Fucking stupid. Gurning is basically making funny faces. It's one of the many obscure sports originated in the United Kingdom. Okay, UK. The competition is... the simplest of all obscure sports. Contestants take turns in pulling the strangest or weirdest looking face they can. The winner is the person who makes the most weirdly obscure face possible. Interestingly, the people who see the most success in gurning are those who are missing teeth. There's nothing interesting. I mean, interesting, yes. Surprising, no. Without teeth, you can contort your face differently. Traditionally, gurning is found in rural towns around Britain. For extra obscurity, a contestant will often have to put their head between a horse collar when competing. Yes, that was something that was noted in another one. We saw another little weird video about that. Don't need to see it. Don't need to see it. You know how they used to say your face will get stuck that way? I wonder, truly, for those that compete, what their face exercises, do they do face yoga? Face yoga is absolutely a thing. I don't know where I was, but I saw something about, I think, was it like Kim Kardashian had a face yoga or something? I don't know if it was like a tweet or something that I saw, but I know when I take yoga, we will often do face stretches. So it's not very far-fetched for me to conceptualize a face yoga. But my point is, for someone that is engaging in something like this, you are literally doing what, I don't know about y'all, but I was told, don't make those faces because your face will get stuck that way. Don't know when I stopped believing that, but I also know sometimes how awkward it feels to contort into certain fashions or manners. So yeah, I can't see wanting to actually do that. I don't need to see it either. I'm good on that. Oh, another one that I want to say that I don't want to see it, but something about it is so, like, this shit is just so obscene that it's just kind of like, oh, but how could I not? You know what I mean? It's, now this shit, let's make it a little bigger. Pishkashi is the national sport of Afghanistan. It is a traditional sport in which horse-mounted players attempt to place a goat or calf carcass in a goal. One more time. It's a traditional sport in which horse-mounted players attempt to place a goat or calf carcass in a goal. Carcass, body. dead body. Sometimes decapitated. But I don't know if there are like tools, like do you use a hook? Do you use a stick, a pole, or any of those things? I don't know that. Similar games are known as Kopar. Kupar, Cup Curry, and Ulak, Tartish in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan. Okay, so Bizkashi began among the nomadic Asian tribes who came from farther north and east, spreading westward from China and Mongolia between the 10th and 15th centuries, in a centuries-long series of migrations that ended only in the 1930s from Scythian times until recent decades. Bizkashi has remained a legacy of that bygone era. So I get cultural significance here. Okay, so in different areas around the world, it looks like there may be certain slight differences. So there's listing for Afghanistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan. I hope I'm pronouncing those right. Pakistan. Let's skip down to the United States, because what? Bizkashi was brought to the U.S. by a descendant from the Afghan royal family, the family of King Amanullah and King Zahir Shah. No. Shah. S-H-A-H. Right? A mounted version of the game has also been played in the United States in the 1940s. Young men in Cleveland, Ohio, played a game they called Cav-Caz. The men, five to a team, played on horseback with a sheepskin-covered ball. The greater Cleveland area had six or seven teams. The game was divided into three chuckers, somewhat like polo. The field was about the size of a football field and has goals at each end. Large wooden frameworks standing on tripods with holes about 2 feet square. The players carried the ball in their hands, holding it by the long fleece sheepskin. A team had to pass the ball three times before throwing it into the goal. The ball fell to the ground. The player had to reach down from his horse to pick it up. One player recalls, others would try to unseat the rider as he leaned over. They would grab you by the shoulder to shove you off. There weren't many rules. Mounted team-based potato races, a popular pastime of the early 20th century America, bore some resemblance to Bizkashi, although on a much smaller and tamer scale. There are rules and variations, different rules and variations in the different countries. In books and film adaptations, several, let's see if any of these stands out, both fiction and nonfiction books. It is shown in Steve Berry's book, The Venetian Betrayal, subject of a book called Horsemen of Afghanistan. Oh, Gino Strada wrote a book named after the sport with the spelling Bizkashi, in which he tells about his life as surgeon in Kabul in the days after the 9/11 strikes. Interesting. Oh. PJ O'Rourke also mentions the game in discussions about Afghanistan and Pakistan in the foreign policy section of Parliament of Whores. Okay. Very interesting titles. I am intrigued. And film. Caravans. Oh, that was 1978. Okay. Oh, no, that was a book. Lie Down with the Lions. Oh, duh. Let's see if any of these pop out. These are all... Okay, so you're telling me Tom Selleck. Oh, I love Tom Selleck. Tom Selleck film High Road to China in 83 features a spirited game of Bizkashi. Anything stand out? Nope. Indian films. None of these are familiar to me. Excuse me. The 2012 Joint International Afghan short film Biskashi Boys depicts a fictional story centered on the game and has won awards at several international film festivals on January 10th, 2023. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences nominated Biskashi Boys for an Oscar in the category of short film live action for the 85th Academy Awards. That was really interesting to me. But Biskashi, I don't know how the actual game with the carcass is played. With the ball, it kind of makes sense. Okay, so if it, like, because you're passing a ball, but I am not sure. I have not come across with how they are getting that carcass. Fierce competition. Okay, there were, prior to the establishment of official rules by the Afghan Olympic Federation, the sport was mainly conducted based upon rules such as not wiping a fellow rider intentionally or deliberately knocking him off his horse. They wear heavy clothing and head protection to protect themselves against other players. Whips and boots. Okay, so there's a whip. There were players from the Soviet Union, and apparently those former players often wear salvaged Soviet tank helmets for protection. The boots usually have high heels that lock into the saddle of the horse to help the rider lean on the side of the horse while trying to pick up the goat. You pick up the goat? My fuck. While trying to pick up the goat. Okay. Games can last for several days and the winning team receives a prize, not necessarily money, as reward for their win. Okay, so a Biskashi player is called a Chapandaz. It is mainly believed in Afghanistan that a skillful Chapandaz is usually in his 40s. Go figure. A sport for the midlifers. Okay. Oh, this is based on the fact that the nature of the game requires its player to undergo severe physical practice and observation. Similarly, horses used in Biskashi also undergo severe training and due attention. A player does not necessarily own the horse. Horses are usually owned by landlords and highly rich people wealthy enough to look after and provide training facilities for such horses. However, a master Chapandaz can choose to select any horse, and the owner of the horse usually wants his horse to be ridden by a master Chapandaz, as a winning horse also brings pride to the owner. Wow. Two main forms. Is a simple and easy. Okay. So in the simple version of the game, the goal is simply to grab the goat and move in any direction until clear of the other players. In the more difficult option, the players must carry the carcasses around a flag or marker at one end of the field and throw it into a scoring circle, the circle of justice, at the other end. The riders will carry a whip to fend off opposing horses and riders. When the rider's hands are occupied, the whip is typically carried in the teeth. Wow, this is intense. The calf in a Biskashi game is normally beheaded and disemboweled and has two limbs cut off. It is then soaked in cold water for 24 hours before play to toughen it. Should I have put like a trigger warning on that? Maybe I'll say. I mean, wow. Occasionally, sand is packed into the carcass to give it extra weight. Wow. Though a goat is used when no calf is available, a calf is less likely to disintegrate during the game. While players may not strap the calf to their bodies or saddles, it is acceptable and common practice to wedge the calf under one leg in order to free up the hands. Okay. Wow. Okay, and there's a picture on the Wikipedia of them holding the, I don't even want to call it a ball, it's legit a headless carcass. Thankfully, you can't really see nothing too crazy in the photo, but I mean, yeah, don't need to see that one either. Don't need to see that. Yeah, that was, yeah, that we ended that with a bang, good folks. Again, that was what, roughly 10 or so. There were some honorable mentions. Some that I like, for example, let me see. Quidditch. Zorbing is like basically putting yourself in a big hamster ball and rolling down a hill. What was the other one? There's one, elephant polo, oil wrestling, ostrich wrestling, excuse me, racing, toe wrestling, would never, wife carrying, underwater hockey, basketball, shin kicking, shovel racing. Oh, this was okay. There were two honorable mention. Fucking ferret legging. They would put ferrets in their pants and see who could like last the longest, apparently. What? They would put a ferret in there, like down there. Come on. Sport hocking. Sport hocking. This was it originates in Germany. It's flipping, spinning, and even sliding of a brightly colored plastic bar stool. Apparently, somewhere else said it's painful. It's kind of like a mix of like parkour and let me see where that sport hocking. This has to be one of the most unusual sports around the world. They also very painful one. Sport hocking originated in Germany. And is among the most weird sports that one can imagine. Just, okay, which requires the participant to flip, spin, or even slide a stool. That's not even apparently the strange part, according to this little snippet, is at the end of each trick, the participant gains respect only if he sits on the stool, no matter how much pain he is in. You must be thinking that these weird sports, I hate all that extra shit. Like you could have just given a better description of the sport instead of just doing all that must hurt. Yeah, we know it does. It's giving the photo is giving breakdancing on like a plastic stool. Yeah. So niggas around the world is gonna do some wild shit. And that's one thing that for one, I've never traveled for sports. I remember going to see my little cousin, Hey Trey, who is currently a pro golfer. Love you, kid. He used to play baseball. I remember going to one of his Little League ball games and he live in Atlanta, so I was in Atlanta for that. Otherwise, I can't say that I have ever traveled for any type of sporting. I've traveled for music. I've never traveled for sports, but you know, there are plenty of things, not plenty. There were at least four or five that I said in this last list of things that I would be interested in seeing. Lucha Libre is at the top of that. But honestly, this is another reminder that travel is so much more than vacation. There are people that will come from far away to compete in these most obscure sports. We are absolutely in such a very connected world because of technology and social media and the way we have ready access to information all over the world. But it does not go unnoticed to me that a lot of these sports were not just similar, but from different places. Like I think it was the first one that I mentioned, Kabaddi, that had similarities from different places. Same thing with let me pronounce it, Biskashi, where you've got different countries that have different get like the same but different games, like different rules, similar, if you will. It's not just that of it all, right? But that people from so many different countries and different areas, so far before social media was what it was, figured out about these sports and were so inclined to play and engage and compete in global arenas, if you will, go to different countries and do these things. Bog snorkeling. People from multiple countries do the shit. Don't know how you would have figured out it was a thing. Don't know who introduced you to it, but I bet you if you travel someplace and you come across a really strange, what is this? This is new. Either you may be intrigued with it yourself and be inclined to dabble, come home and talk hot shit about it, and inspire that cousin of yours that's always down for some wild shit, or even introduce it to someone that they then decide to do it in their own home. I won't say I'm surprised, but I'm always tickled when there are the strangest little ways to intersect travel with regular life. And I gonna hold y'all. This one was fun. This one caught me a little bit off guard with some of them, because some of this shit is just wild and outlandish. Ostrich racing. There's so many of them, and there are a bunch of different little websites. I'm gonna have a bunch of links in the description. There's plenty that I haven't even gotten into. There are different, and these are just like popular-ish ones or like very outlandish. I'm sure that there are really niche games, events that happen in other countries that are more inconceivable or wilder than the Piscashi, y'all. It's a dead goat. They're running around with a dead goat. Theirs, and that was from like eons ago. That's not new. The newer ones, strange, weird. Why would you do it? I get it. Maybe fun. But some of these older ones, a little harsh. But what are the strangest things that you guys have seen in terms of the sports? Have you played in any interesting sports that are not like, you know, the many popular ones in the United States? I would be very curious to hear what you guys' take on global sports would be. Hope you guys enjoyed this one, and I can't wait to come back with another fun one for you guys next week. Bye.